Hey, it's your friend Mel, and welcome to the Mel Robbins Podcast. You know, I've just noticed lately how many of you are writing in and you're saying that you don't feel like yourself. You're just not as motivated or as energized as you used to be. And you know you're a high performer. You know kind of what you need to do or what you want to do. But it's like there's just something missing and you can't quite put your finger on it. Well, I want you to know, I see you. And you're not alone. What you're feeling is so common right now, and it's not unique to you, and there's something you can do about it. And so I searched high and I searched low to find the perfect person to come here to our Boston studios and help both you and me, because it's really frustrating to feel like you are a race car that is stuck in neutral, that you are trying to hit the gas pedal, but the car is not going anywhere. See, I don't want you to just show up in your life. I want you to feel like you are actually living it. And that's what our expert is going to teach us to do today. Dr. K is here, and you're going to love everything he is about to teach you and me about motivation. And what Dr. K says is this, that right now you're probably in a battle with yourself because you don't even understand the way your brain works. Well, you and I are going to change that today. I cannot wait for what is going to be a profound masterclass on motivation, dopamine, and even deeper than that, how you can tap back in to that thing that's missing and start getting where you want to go in your life. It's your friend Mel. Thank you so much for being here with me today. It is always such an honor to spend some time with you. And I want to acknowledge you. I want to acknowledge you for taking the time and choosing to listen to something that could help you create a better life. That is so amazing that you're doing that for yourself. And I just consider it an honor that I get to spend this time with you. If you are a brand new listener or somebody that you love forwarded you this episode, I want to personally welcome you to the Mel Robbins Podcast family. I'm Mel Robbins. I am on a mission to empower and inspire you with the tools and expert resources that you need and deserve that are going to help you create a better life. And I am so thrilled to be able to introduce you to Dr. Alok Kanogia, also known as Dr. K. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because he is now back on the Mel Robbins Podcast. You loved him when he first appeared several months ago. Dr. K is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist specializing in modern mental health and the impact that technology is having on your brain. And what I love about Dr. K is, well, there's a lot of things I love about him. I love how he explains these really heady topics. And I also love the fact that he has a super impressive and diverse skill set. First of all, he did his medical and psychiatric training here in Boston at Harvard, and he's also been studying integrative health and Ayurvedic mental health for over 20 years. He's the co-founder of Healthy Gamer, which is a huge mental health platform and training company. They've got over 175 employees who are dedicated to helping people overcome addictions to technology, and they also train clinicians in Dr. K's methodology. His YouTube channel, Healthy Gamer GG, has over 2 million followers, and he's the author of the new book, How to Raise a Healthy Gamer. Dr. K is one of the leading authorities online on unlocking motivation, dopamine, how to tap back into that get up and go inside of you. I'm so fired up he is here. Dr. K, I'm so incredibly thrilled that you're here. Thank you for jumping on a plane. I'm so excited. Could you tell the person listening how their life might change if they take everything that you're about to share with them to heart?
I think the way that they live life would be very different. And I think their outcomes in life would also change immensely. So I think the basic thing to keep in mind is that we don't learn how we work. We have a fundamental educational system that teaches us mathematics, history, marketing, finance, but no one teaches you this is how your mind works. This is where desires come from. This is how you get motivated. And we assume that there's no formal education in this, but there absolutely is a formal education in this. And once we sort of dig into that, like what I tend to find with the patients that I work with, people who watch my lectures and stuff like that, is we just teach them how they work. And once you understand how you work, once you understand the buttons of the controller that is you, then you can direct your character in life wherever you want to go.
Dr. K, I have been so looking forward to this because I know that you are going to deliver a masterclass today. I mean, you're followed by millions of people online. You're a Harvard-trained psychiatrist who can help us unlock the secret to motivation and meaning in life. You have a really interesting story. So can you just tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. So my parents moved here from India. I'm the child of immigrants. I was born in the United States. Both of my parents were doctors. So growing up, I was supposed to be a doctor and really didn't have my heart in it. So I wasn't motivated, basically failed out of college. Like I had less than a 2.0 GPA after my first year of college was on academic probation.
Well, did you just not go to class? Like a less than a 2.0, that actually takes some work to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
So I was very addicted to video games.
Oh.
Played a bunch of games, basically failed out of college, would play for 16, 18, 20 hours a day. And then my parents like tried everything. So they tried like punishment. They tried like being very like supportive, and they just didn't know what to do because even today, we don't quite understand how technology affects our brains and it affects us so profoundly. So after about 2 years, my dad said, you got to go to India. And I went to an ashram, which is like a monastery. And I stayed there for 3 months and decided to become a monk at the age of 21. My teachers told me that I was too young. They told me, you need to go back to school. You need to get a doctoral degree and then you can take your vows at 30. I was like, you know, I want to give up my life. And one of my teachers was like, you don't have anything worth giving up. So if you want to become a monk, you have to go build something in the world and then give it up. Like rise to the top of your profession, get a doctoral degree at a minimum, and then give it up. Right now you're running away. You're escaping. There's nothing worth giving up. They ended up sending me back. So I would travel for about back and forth for about 7 years and learn more advanced practices and stuff like that. Ended up meeting my wife. So it turns out my teachers were very wise. So the whole monk thing was not going to work out. Decided to go to med school, partially because she wanted to be married to a doctor. And my teachers had said, you have to get some kind of doctoral degree. So I was like, why not medicine?
That seems like a big commitment to try to impress somebody that you are dating. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'll go to medical school if you like me.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because that's how it would seem, right?
Right.
So we have all these ideas about, you know, you shouldn't craft your life based on someone else's preferences and stuff like that. But I think it's, you know, if you're internally okay with it, I knew I had to get some kind of doctorate degree. I'm very interested in how human beings work. That's what I loved about India. So what I learned in India is like, this is how a human being works from the inside.
Mm.
Not research, but the challenge with scientific research is that it's hard to apply to an individual. What I love about sort of this Eastern perspective on spirituality, it's like, I mean, if I tell you your desire comes from the nucleus accumbens, you can't do anything with that.
I would be like, what? It comes from the nuclea humma humma?
Exactly, right? So there's some neurotransmitter floating around in your brain, but it's not actionable information.
Yes.
So what I learned in India was an actionable way to change myself. And then came back, graduated with a 2.5 GPA after like 5.5 years of undergrad.
Okay.
And then it took me about 3 years to get into med school. I got rejected from 120 med schools.
120 med schools you applied to?
Over the course of 3 years, yeah, like 40 a year.
Wow. And you kept going though.
Yes. So that's speaking of motivation, right? So
yes.
I think when your motivation comes from the right place, you are impervious to the circumstances around you affecting your motivation.
Oh, whoa. Okay. I know we're going to dig deep into that, but I want to make sure as you're listening to Dr. K, you really just got what he just said. When the motivation comes from the right place, you're impervious to all the external things that are going on.
Absolutely, 100%. So ended up, you know, getting rejected a lot. After 2 years of applying to med school and not getting in, people in my family were like, hey, maybe you should think about something else. Like your GPA is set in stone, right? Ended up getting into med school, went to Tufts for med school, and then also had decided to do psychiatry. So originally I was going to do like holistic cancer treatment. So I had studied a lot of Indian medicine in India and alternative medicine, yoga, meditation, all that good stuff. But did psychiatry because my favorite organ was the mind, and really noticed a lack in the West of our understanding of the mind. Because we do things based on population-based studies, right? So we can say motivation comes from this part of the brain. But as a human being, how do you take that fact and apply it to your life? That is what was missing in the field for me.
Yeah.
ended up doing my psychiatry training at Harvard, down the street at Mass General Hospital and McLean Hospital. Was an awesome experience. And then a couple years in, I had a pretty large group of people coming to me wanting like holistic mental health treatment. So how can I conquer this depression or anxiety or narcissism or sociopathy? Worked with a lot of CEOs and kind of high performers in like finance and places like that. And then I realized that there's like no shortage of people trying to help this group of people, right? People who can pay a lot of money for like really high quality support and to really unlock their potential or maximize their potential or whatever. But there were a bunch of people who no one was helping. And those are the degenerate gamers. These are like the 22-year-olds who finish college and never get a job. These are people who drop out of college. These are people who are 25 years old living in their parents' basement and like no one's helping them. They can't pay anything. So I started streaming on Twitch and doing mental health content on Twitch and was stunned when we became the fastest growing stream on Twitch for a period of about 3 months.
Wow. So for the person listening who does not know what Twitch is, could you kind of explain what you mean when you're giving mental health content on Twitch?
Yeah. So Twitch is a live streaming platform that usually streams games. So what I noticed is that in my office, I was having gamers come in and I was like teaching them certain concepts. I wasn't actually doing therapy. I was like, here's how your mind works. Here's the effect of dopamine on your brain and your motivation and things like that. And so I just had the same conversation over and over and over again. So what I started doing was streaming conversations on Twitch. So I would talk to people and I would start teaching some of these principles, almost like a podcast where I just like some random person would call in and I'd do like Q&A or they'd be like, you know, I struggle with motivation. I'd say, okay, like let's understand the neuroscience of motivation. So we'd kind of dig into that. And what I really discovered is that if you look at like people today, right? So we're being so shaped by our environment. Other people decide what kind of thoughts we have. So we're seeing, you know, companies get better at advertising. We're seeing short form content. Other people are shaping your views about yourself. They're shaping what you think will make you happy in life. So we're bombarded with all of these images of what it means to be happy.
Right.
Then what happens is there's a deficit. So our brain notices, oh, look at all those happy people over there. I am not doing those things and I am unhappy. And then they try to sell you something. There's a lot of very like intentional shaping of people's unhappiness and then selling people solutions. So as all of these kinds of effects are going on, we don't know how to fight against that.
So true.
And we'll say like, okay, just cut back on technology use, but it's become a part of our work. It's how you keep track of, like I get emails from my kid's music teacher to tell them classes canceled. So you have to stay plugged in. And so we're not equipped with the tools to fight against this external environment shaping us.
That makes a lot of sense. And so it's almost as if there are two pieces that we need to really dig into. And the first one is the internal and really understanding. You go to school and you learn all of these subjects, but you don't learn how a human being or how you operate from the inside out. And so I think we're all scared of the way that our environment and tech is shaping us. And where I want to start, especially given the number of people that are following you online and the kind of advice that you're giving on YouTube, I mean, millions and millions of people, Dr. K, what are we getting wrong about motivation?
So much. So in the West, what we call motivation, there is no motivation center of the brain. Motivation is an internal drive that comes from emotions, comes from what you should be doing, comes from issues of like ego and identity, comes from issues of comparison, right? So there's so many different things that motivate us. So this is the first thing, is that motivation is not a thing. It is lots of different things. The biggest mistake we make with motivation is that we try to increase it. And I know it sounds weird, but let's understand what motivation is. So let's say you're motivated to do something. Is it easy for you?
Yes.
That's a problem. That's not a solution. It's a problem.
Why is it a problem if something's easy for me?
Because you are not in control. So if you feel motivated, you're trying to make your life easy instead of being in control of yourself. So an alternate solution is imagine if you could act independent of motivation, even if you didn't feel like it. Because everyone's trying to increase their motivation because we're so burnt out all the time. We don't have the energy for it. I'm looking to make it easy for myself. When my body, my brain, and my mind are sending us signals, don't do this. I don't feel like doing this. And we're ignoring that. And so then what we try to do is we try to create situations that make it easy for us to act. But this creates a fundamental flaw.
How so?
Because if the situation changes and your motivation changes, then you're screwed.
So you're basically saying just take the simple thing of getting out of bed in the morning. The second the alarm rings, most of us have some sort of emotion that we feel about the act of simply getting out of bed. Something we've done thousands of times in our lifetime. We know how to do. It is relatively simple set of actions to roll out of bed and stand up and start your day. But we, so many of us are relying on this feeling of motivation, which is, I guess the way that I would describe it is this emotion of wanting to do something and feeling like it's going to be easy. And if that feeling is there magically in the morning, I get out of bed. But if it's not, I don't take the action. So is that a good example of what
exactly.
you're talking about?
So let's like play that tape through, right? Okay. So that means that if the motivation isn't there,
yes,
the first thing that happens, your alarm rings.
Yeah.
And then your cognitive willpower starts to drain because you already have to overcome something.
Yes.
Right? So you start waking up and getting out of the bed tired.
Yes.
Because you don't feel motivated.
Correct.
If you think about it, what that means is that what I want to do controls my life because those are the things that I do. So now the question becomes, what's better, for you to be in control of your wants or for your wants to be in control of you?
I think I just got something. So you were addicted to video gaming. It's what caused you to fail out of college. It's also in many ways what drove you and inspired you to speak to all of us about the brain and about understanding your internal drivers and yourself. And if you look at it in the negative, all addiction begins with wanting to do something and allowing your wants to be in complete control. I want to eat that thing. I want to drink that thing. I want to play that video game. I want to just have sex with somebody that I don't even know. I want to ignore that obligation. I want to do this. And so when you start to live a life where your wants and your desires in the moment are controlling what you do and what you don't do, you're out of control. Is that what you're saying?
100%. Not only are you out of control, you'll be unhappy. So first thing is, if we look at addiction, we know that there are uniform pathways of addiction in the brain, and all addictions do two things. One is they give us pleasure, and the second is that they take away pain. And this is true of opiates, heroin, and social media, video games. They activate this part of our brain called the nucleus accumbens, which is where our dopamine reinforcement circuitry is. It gives us pleasure when we get something, and it also gives us craving. So if you think about like eating a cookie, it's delicious. Let me have another one. The second thing that all addictions do is they suppress our negative emotional circuitry. So if you look at eating a cookie, if I'm having a bad day and I eat a cookie, I feel a little bit better. I'm feeling burnt out. I'm feeling tired. Let me hop on my phone. Let me browse social media for a little while. And it pushes the tiredness away for a time. But when you get off of your phone, or do you feel energized? Do you feel like now it's time to like, now I have the energy to go and cook a meal and go take care of this stuff and send an email to my boss? No, all you're doing is delaying your tiredness.
Dr. K, my head is spinning because as I'm listening to you, I'm not only learning about what I need to do, but there are about five people that come to mind immediately that I want to share this episode with, like right now. And so let's take a quick break so we can hear a word from our amazing sponsors. Because of their support, we can give you Dr. K at zero cost and all this life-changing information. And please, take a minute and share this. Share this with your kids. Share this with your partner. Share this with family members, because we all need to understand this and we need to know what to do about it. And don't go anywhere, because Dr. K and I are going to be waiting for you after a short break. There is so much more we're going to dig into and you're going to want to be here for it. So we'll see you then. Welcome back. It's your buddy, Mel. And you and I are here today with Dr. K. He is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. He is known and loved by millions of followers online at HealthyGamerGG on YouTube. Dr. K, what do you want us to understand about motivation as we start to look at what I think most people struggle with, which is this feeling every day that I'm not able to follow through on some of the simple things that I really want to be doing, but I, for whatever reason, I'm not, quote, motivated to exercise or eat healthy or make that phone call?
It's a great question. So let's understand a little bit about where motivation comes from.
Okay.
And we'll draw on both principles of like Eastern spirituality that yogis practicing meditation in the Himalayas figured out a couple thousand years ago that have now been verified by neuroscience. So let's start with when I act, right? So you're saying I have struggle with follow through. So that's the problem with motivation, is that motivation waxes and wanes because motivation is oftentimes highly emotional. So if we look at the part of our brain that creates behavior, emotions give us information and they give us motivation. So if I feel angry, I will feel like doing something. If I feel afraid, it will motivate me to run away. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, is that emotions vary. That's the way they're supposed to be. They don't last forever. So our brain has this very natural principle of homeostasis, which means that we experience joy and then the joy goes away. And so then what we end up doing is chasing those things that bring us joy. That would be great, except there's another principle in the brain of tolerance. So if I eat one cookie, it's delicious. If right. I eat a second cookie, it's not quite as tasty. If I eat a third cookie, now I'm feeling full.
True.
And even then, oftentimes, if I think about getting that cookie tomorrow, it's not going to be as good as the first time I have it. So now we're kind of stuck because our motivation is going to wax and wane with our emotions. We're trying to cultivate these past experiences over and over again to try to keep us motivated, and it just doesn't work. So what can we do? This is where we're going to focus on a principle from kind of Eastern philosophy called karma phala. So karma is action and phala means fruit. So there's a really simple principle that the more that you devote yourself to your actions instead of outcomes, the more easy your life will be and the more you will be in control of your behavior. We have a society that is increasingly focusing on outcomes, and we also have a society that the human beings are increasingly burnt out and lack motivation. And those two things are tied. So if we're not going to focus on outcomes, then how the hell do we get motivated? Let's understand another thing about the brain. So our brain does this thing called an action success calculation. So what it does is anytime we're thinking about doing something, our brain knows, okay, what's the likelihood of this to succeed and what's the likelihood of this to fail? And the problem is that if you're trying to cultivate motivation and you put in a lot of work and we're focused on the outcome and things don't work out, then I won't reinforce the behavior, right? So if I say, like, I'm going to study really hard for a test and I don't do well on the test, what does my brain learn about the value of studying?
That it doesn't help.
It doesn't help.
So is this one of the reasons why so many of us give up either going on a healthier diet or going to the gym and working out because you're not seeing the results? So you start to go, this isn't working.
Absolutely. So if we look at behavioral change, we have one evidence-based technique that helps people change their behavior, which is something called motivational interviewing.
So what is motivational interviewing?
It is a way to talk to people that increases their motivation.
Oh my God. So can we use this with people in our life too, not just with ourselves?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So we're going to learn.
Okay.
Not just with people in our life. I mean, I'd say we do it in psychiatry with other people. The beautiful thing is you can do it with yourself.
Oh my God, let's go.
Okay. We figured out that most human beings are conflicted. Okay. So I want to go to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym. Now, before I go to the gym, the pain of going to the gym is a hypothetical. The pleasure of staying home is also a hypothetical, right? So when we start out, neither of these two things are realities. So I think about the gym, I think here's the cost, here's the benefit, but it's a hypothetical, right?
Right, because I haven't gone. So I'm just making it all up in my mind.
So as I go to the gym, the hypothetical pain becomes real. I can think about working out, that's not painful. Actually working out, huffing and puffing, I want to stop. This is my body's like, don't do this. My knees are hurting. The pain actually increases. So anytime we move towards an action, the pain increases. The reason we want to engage in the action is because at the end of the pain is some kind of pleasure, right? There's some kind of outcome that we're devoted to. And then we hope that the pain will be worth the pleasure. But our brain doesn't see it that way. What our brain sees, and you'll notice this if you're kind of like, you know, thinking about something in your life where you think about doing something and you know it's going to be painful, but when you start to do it, it's actually painful and it actually decreases our motivation. So moving towards our goals oftentimes comes at a cost before a benefit.
That makes a lot of sense. So just so I can break this down so everybody's tracking, intellectually, you can know you want to do something, but you are going to think about what it's like to get out of bed or think what it's like to go to the gym or think what it's like to work on your resume, right? And because it's going to require you to move toward the pain before you get the payoff, motivation decreases as you move toward this thing that you really want to do.
Absolutely, right? And this is also presuming that the reason for your motivation is the positive outcome, right? That's why we're motivated, because right. I want to be healthy. I want that sexy
right.
beach bod.
Right.
But the problem is that when we actually engage in the behavior, when I go to the gym, I don't get a sexy beach bod.
No.
So then my brain is looking at this and it's saying, wait, yeah. why are we doing this?
Correct.
This is just pain. There's no benefit.
Yes.
This is dumb.
Yes.
And then we wake up the next day and we're like, our brain is like, don't do that thing. And yes. then we all get confused. This is why we need to separate ourselves from the outcome, because our brain makes this calculation and says, this pain in the gym today is not worth the payoff today, obviously, right? And then it's going to turn around and it's going to say, don't do this thing.
What's so fascinating is you are revealing the mechanism internally that's at play that most of us are unaware of. And so we are engaged in all of this sort of like mind battles with ourselves. We're calling ourselves lazy. We're saying that we're this. Like, why can't I do this? When you're simply saying, honestly, this is how your brain works. You're not going to see the result right away. You're wired to move away from the pain. And so you cannot focus on the result, because that is not going to get you through this little contradiction in your brain.
Beautifully said, right? So what I would say is we are spending our whole lives swimming upstream. Instead of understanding our motivational circuitry, we are trying to conquer it. Instead of utilizing it, we're trying to fight against it and overcome it. So instead, understand how your motivation works, and then you can craft your life so that like action becomes easy and outcomes will improve too. There's like tons of data on this. So now let's start by understanding that I have this positive goal
yep.
that comes with a reward. But when I think about working on my resume or going to the gym, I'm looking for that positive reward at the end. I'm not really anticipating the pain. So instead, what we want to do is we actually want to let go of that goal. And in motivational interviewing with someone who's addicted to alcohol, here's how this looks. So people will say, I want to be sober for a year. I will say, you can't be sober for a year. It is impossible to be sober for a year. If I said, Mel, get up right now and be sober for a year, could you do it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Sober for a year is not an action. It is an outcome.
Oh, hold on. Because you're right. When you said be sober for a year, my little brain went do, 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 365 days, not drinking. Okay. Box check box. And I jumped to, I accomplished it. I totally fell into your trap, Dr. K.
Absolutely.
Well, I do want to break it down, because I think the person listening and myself, we are so hardwired to think about the things that we want, that you're trying to get us to understand that we've got to interrupt the way that our brain jumps to the end and start to think a different way to make this work for us. Is that what you're saying?
100%.
Because I think like half the people listening are probably going, well, I'd like to find a significant other. I'd like to lose weight. I'd like to have $1 million in the bank. All goals and outcomes. And you're basically saying that kind of thinking keeps you stuck swimming upstream and not able to activate what you need in order to act in the way that you need to act.
Beautifully said. So now remember that if I go to the gym, it's painful. I don't see the yield today. So then where does the motivation of going to the gym come from? You wake up one day and you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, I'm tired of looking like this. You're driven by negativity.
Yes.
Your drive to go to the gym is pain.
Right.
Our brain gets confused because we're moving away from pain into pain. And our brain is like, this doesn't make sense. So this is why people don't have follow through. They pendulum. I'm going to the gym this week. I'm not going to go next week, right? Because it's you're always listening to your negative part. You're saying, I'm unhappy with this. I'm unhappy with the amount of money I make. So I'm going to work harder at work, which is not a pleasant experience. So we keep on ping-ponging between like negativity and negativity.
This actually makes a lot of sense. I was with somebody last night who has been in a job for 2 years where they keep promising promotion. This person keeps delivering what they're supposed to do. And it's not coming. And there's a lot of, I can't stand this situation, and yet I don't know what to do about it. 1 week I want to quit. 1 week I'm working harder. And it is this pendulum thing that you see. And from the outside, you go, why don't you just get another job? But from the inside, you really do see somebody trapped between one situation that's painful, which is trying to double down in a job that's not working versus the other situation that's painful, which is organizing your resume and putting yourself out there and looking for a job. And so that to me makes a lot of sense as to why we swing between these spurts of exercising and not eating healthy and then not drinking and then not.
And that's a beautiful example. What we find is there's no actual fluctuation. You are following through 100%. What you are following through with is you're always moving away from your negativity. So you keep on running away from the negative things in your life and you stay stuck. You are still being controlled by those desires all the time. So consistency doesn't come from obeying whatever emotion you're feeling in the moment, right? Like that makes perfect sense. The point of the human body, the human brain, and the human mind, these are all instruments to serve you. You don't exist for their benefit. They exist for your benefit. My arm, my tongue does not dictate what I do with my life. And yet we let our brains and our mind dictate what we're doing with our life. It's absurd. The key is to focus on the action, not the outcome. When the mind thinks about action, the outcomes improve. And when the mind thinks about outcomes, sometimes you get there, sometimes you don't. You get into this motivational problem. So kind of going back to my life, I decided I'm going to apply. That's what I'm going to focus on.
And you're talking about the fact that over the course of 3 years, you applied to 120 medical schools until you got in.
Until I got in, right? So, and people think like, oh, doesn't the first 10 failures weigh on you? Don't the next 10 failures weigh on you? Because that's how most of us live our life, right?
Yeah.
What is the difference, Mel, between applying for the first medical school and the 100th medical school?
Well, when you think about the actual action, there is zero difference because you are filling out paperwork, you are organizing a bunch of stuff, and you're hitting submit.
And so then where does the difference come from? You're 100% right.
Your emotion and the stories you tell yourself about the difference between the first application and the 100th.
So I want you to think about this. The action is exactly the same. The only thing that is holding me back is the weight in my mind that I have failed 99 times before. That is not reality. That is a thought in your head that is telling you that you have failed 99 times. And as long as that is the way that your life is working, you will never be in control. Because if my mind wakes up, some people say 20 is too much. Some people say that 20 failures or 20 denials of a job, I feel weighed down. For some people, they can tolerate 40. For some people, they can tolerate 60. And the people who quit after 20 look at the people who try 60 times and they say, I wish I could be like that. I wish I could follow through. I wish I could have more discipline. They're all doing it wrong. Each action that you take in life is individual.
100%. I'm constantly astonished by the number of people who write in because they feel like they're either too young or too old to do the things that they want to do. And for me, as a 56-year-old woman who launched this podcast 18 months ago, I just go, well, I just put my head down and just focused on the simple things every single day that lead to launching a podcast. And all of that garbage that you're telling yourself, like I'm too young or I'm too old or I'm too this or I'm too that, it's complete fiction. The action is actually the only way that you prove that that crap in your mind is a lie.
Yeah. The challenge is that we are so conditioned to thinking that our thoughts are reality.
So how do I use motivational interviewing to tap into this wiring inside me in an effective way, Dr. K?
Great question. So if you want to be consistent every day, step number one, abandon every day.
What?
Abandon every day. You can't do something every day. Focus on today.
Okay.
You see how deeply it is?
Yes, I see that I'm screwed.
So I'll give you a great example. So when we think about every day, successes become failures in my mind. So if I say to myself, I'm going to meditate every day, and I meditate for 39 days, and day 40 rolls around, did I meditate every day, Mel? Have I succeeded in my goal?
You did for 39 days.
It's still a failure.
Right? Because you didn't do it on the 40th.
So now I'm looking at 39 days of success and I'm calling it a failure because I didn't do it on day 40. Crazy.
Crazy.
I work with people who are addicted to substances, right? And these are people who will be sober for 48 days and then they will have a relapse. And then this is no longer sober. It becomes binary. And then what does the brain do? The brain says, what's the point of resisting alcohol for 39 days if we're just going to drink on day 40? We demotivate ourselves. So what we want to focus on is the action. Focus on the present. Focus on doing the thing.
And so if you're waking up and you want to use this tool in your life, and there's something that you would like to make more consistent, which is still not a thing, I see how quickly I default to, I want to do it every day. I want to be more consistent. I want to lose the weight. I want to make more money. How do I use this technique to get myself to focus on what I need to do today, Dr. K?
Couple of very good things that you can do cognitively.
Okay.
First is focus on the negative. Anticipate the negative. Tomorrow when I wake up, I'm not going to feel like going to the gym. Mentally prepare for the difficulty.
Okay.
Then you're not caught off guard by it, right? You're not thinking, see, well, when everyone thinks about going to the gym, they're thinking about the positive. They're not thinking about the negative. So the first thing that you actually want to do is anticipate the difficulty of the action that you want to take.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. I can give you, as you're listening, an example. I've been doing a lot of the cold exposure. I hate it. And I do not try to motivate myself, so to speak, or get myself all hyped up. I'm literally like, this is going to blow. I'm going to do it. It's going to be 90 seconds of my life, and I'm just getting in the damn barrel. And there's something about saying it that it's almost like this sort of internal resistance lowers. I don't know how, what is happening in your body when you use this? Like, I'm going to have a healthy dinner tonight, and it's going to suck. And I know I would rather have a delicious, juicy cheeseburger, but I'm going to just eat the salad and the clean protein, and that's going to be that. And that's what I'm doing. What happens in your brain when you do step one, Dr. K, and you anticipate the negative?
So the first thing that it does is it doesn't let you get caught off guard. You're changing your expectations from a positive thing to a negative thing. And what we know about human beings and expectations is nothing basically lives up to your expectations. When you actually do the thing, it's usually not as bad as you expected. The other thing that you're doing, which is very, very important, is you are taming your brain. You're telling your brain, it's not about motivation, because motivation is about gratification of the brain, right? It's like, I want to do this thing and I want to feel good. It's all about positive. It's about getting that reward at the end. It's right. About the outcome. We are divorcing the action from pleasure or pain or anything. We are learning to be independent of pleasure and pain. I say I'm going to do this. That's what I'm going to do. I do not care what my brain wants. And this is what happens. You are separating yourself.
I love this, Dr. K. I want to make sure you got this, because this to me, this is something you have to understand. I even want you to visualize it. This makes so much sense to me now that you have taught us that motivation really is about pleasure and craving and drive and all that stuff over here. And you, when you say step one, I am just going to anticipate the negative. I'm going to tell myself this is going to suck. I'm going to focus on what I'm doing today. And by doing that, you are literally cleaving the like a separation between pleasure seeking part of your brain.
And pain avoidance.
And pain avoidance, to literally activating the ability to see that something's not going to be enjoyable, but you're going to do it anyway. This makes so much sense. You're right. Basically flipping the switch on the part of the brain that activates to go, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
I see this coming. You can take a nap, because we're going to go and have the healthy meal.
Absolutely. So this is where in Sanskrit, there's this concept of detachment or vairagya, which a lot of people think will mean like apathy and a lack of motivation, but it's actually quite the opposite.
What is detachment?
So detachment is divorcing ourselves of the outcomes of our actions. So to focus on the action itself instead of worrying about the outcome.
You're basically saying that there is a superpower in life in putting all of your energy and focus and resources into what you can do right now. And you can be committed to something in the future, but you can't focus on that. You got to focus on the actions and what you can do right now.
100%. You call it a superpower. This is where I would say this should be the default state. So if you stop and think about it, Mel, what do you control in this life?
I control what I am going to do next. And that's it. That's it. I can't control anything that you're doing.
100%.
Can't control anything that anybody outside these windows in downtown Boston are doing. I can't control what you're thinking or how you feel. And in many ways, I can't actually control the emotions that come up, because they're just rising and falling, or the thoughts that rise and fall. But I can, with practice, focus on what action I take next. That's it.
So it's crazy, right? So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I want everyone to stop for a second and think about what you literally can control. It is the bounds of your body. That's it. And I see this especially with women because they are responsible for their husbands. They're responsible for their parents. They're responsible. We put so much responsibility on women for the people around them. Mm-hmm. So here you are stuck in this world where you are trying to get everyone else to fall in line. It is impossible. And then we get so bent out of shape to get my boss to do this, to get my son to do this, to get my parents to do this. We're trying to control everything around us and we cannot control it. It's physically impossible.
Dr. K, I got to level with you. I want my entire team to listen to this episode. What you are teaching us is life-changing. We all need to know how to take control of this issue in our life. And so here's what I want you to do as you're listening. There are people in your life that you're really worried about. Please let Dr. K explain this to them. Let Dr. K do the heavy lifting. When he puts it into context, like it makes you want to do something different. And so please take a moment, share this episode with the people in your life who really need to hear it, which is everybody. And don't go anywhere. We will be waiting for you after a very short break with our sponsors. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's your friend Mel. You and I are here today with Dr. K, and he has got my head spinning. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to share this information and this episode as a resource with people in your life. Now let's jump back into it. Dr. K, I have another question for you. How do I use this idea of motivational interviewing, though, to get people to do things that are hard? Give me the script, Dr. K. So if I'm sitting down with somebody that I really care about, and maybe they've just let their health slide. It's a partner that I have been with for a while. They've put on a bunch of weight. They've become pretty sedentary. I'm worried about their happiness and just their overall state. What is the script? Because a lot of us don't even know how to freaking open the conversation up.
How do you feel about your health?
Oh.
That's the question.
Fine. Like, I'm okay.
Okay. It sounds like you're okay about your health. Like, you feel okay about it.
Yeah.
What makes you feel okay about it?
Ooh, I'm feeling like you're pinning me to the wall, Dr. K. I don't know. I've been like this a long time.
It sounds like you've been this way for a long time, so you've gotten used to it.
Oh, yes, I have.
How do you feel about that?
I guess I feel like it's going to take a lot of work to change things. I'm comfortable where I am.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying you're comfortable. It almost feels a little bit more to me like resignation. Like maybe it's going to take too much work to change.
Yeah, it does feel like it would take a lot. And I've tried things in the past and I work a lot and I'm constantly traveling for work and I just don't have time for it.
And I'm hearing that it must be really challenging because first of all, it takes a lot of work and you have so much on your plate that you certainly don't have time for it.
Exactly.
That's got to be tough.
It is.
What's hard about it?
Oh, God, man. I can't hide from you, Dr. K. I feel like I'm letting you down because I know you would like me to do something about it. And I'm tired of you nagging me about it. And I don't feel like you understand how hard it is for me.
It must be incredibly frustrating to have me nagging you all the time, riding your ass, expecting more of you.
It is.
Can you tell me a little bit about how long you felt that way?
Wow, a long time. This is really good because what I'm experiencing, even though I'm stepping in the shoes of somebody, is I'm experiencing this sensation that I can't escape the truth.
And you're speaking. You're talking about your conflict. You're articulating your difficulty.
Yes.
That's what we lean into. Right. So if I come at you and you say I'm nagging you. Right?
Yeah.
And then I say like, yeah, that's got to be hard. So I don't say it's for a good reason. Right. We default to like, it's for a good reason. It's because I love you. Like we got to do it because of X, Y, Z. By the way, that's a very real conversation. If people were listening, I'm sure they felt it. Right. Because that's what it's like. You don't realize how hard I work. Oh, my God. Powerful statement, especially in a relationship.
What are you looking for? In terms of the moment where it breaks open, or are you not even looking for that? You just want somebody to...
Oh, we're halfway there already. Absolutely, right? Because now we're talking about your difficulty. So now I ask you like, you know, like it's got to be so hard
yeah.
to do this too, because you're doing this, I'm riding on your ass. that must be so difficult. What's that like? And we keep on digging in. Because here's the problem. When our mind has difficulties, we try to push them away. We try to conquer them. But there's a very simple principle of like psychology, which is that that which stays within the mind will grow over time. So what do we know is that when someone gets traumatized, they keep it on the inside and it compounds, it expands over time. So what's our treatment for trauma? Anything that you vent from the mind will decrease in the mind. The energy of it literally goes away. So when we do like therapy for people and we're talking about how hard it is to struggle with alcohol, how hard it is to go to the gym, all of that difficulty almost gets vented. It's bizarre. We come to accept it for what it is instead of trying to conquer it, instead of wishing it was a different way. It is hard. So start by engaging in understanding. Start by repairing this. Start by helping me who is nagging you understand. And once I understand, and once you feel like I understand, then you will actually listen to me.
And what do you say to somebody once it gets to that point where you've had this realization as the nagger, right? That holy cow, like it's got to be difficult to be you. How do you open the door for how can I help you? Or what do you need? Or do you even want to do something about this?
Very good. I don't know if you noticed this, but you rolled back where you were heading. So how can I help you presumes that you want help. And you ended up with, do you even want to do something about this? So if I jump to how can I help, we haven't agreed that you want help. Now I ask you point blank, do you want to change this? And then the person much more likely to say yes. And now you have done it. Because now they used to say no. Now they're saying yes. I do want to do something about it. Now the motivation is coming from them. So instead of pushing them, you create a vacuum. And anytime you create a vacuum, there's a negative space and they will be pulled into that space. That's the big thing that we don't understand about cultivating motivation in other people. We need to give them space, not push. Anytime I push a human being, they will resist. That is human psychology, psychology 101. It's why we do this reverse psychology and stuff like that. You'll see it in your kids. Put on your jacket, then put on your shoes. No, I want to put on my shoes, then I want to put on my jacket. We want to flip it around. Which one do you want to put on first?
You're a genius.
I don't know if I'm a genius. I've had teachers who are geniuses.
So what is it, if you had to summarize it, Dr. K, that really keeps us stuck?
I'd say the main thing that keeps us stuck is that we are controlled by our mind. So then if the mind wants to go this way in one day, and it's not stuck, it is moving back and forth.
Say that again, because we do use the word, I feel stuck, but you're saying that's actually the wrong word and it's inaccurate.
Yes. So a lot of times, like when I work with people who are like stuck in life, okay? So they'll say like, I'm stuck and I have no motivation. This is incorrect. It's not that you have no motivation. It's that you have a very powerful motivation to not move, right? So if you try to move, what happens? A pile of resistance arises within you that has been dormant. And it says, don't go outside. Let it go. Don't pick the fight. Walk on eggshells. Don't piss off your boss. Stay seated. Don't do anything. That's powerful motivation. It's not a lack of motivation. And now I think that my cup is empty when it's actually full and I keep on adding water to it and it spills all over the place because I misdiagnosed the problem. Proper treatment comes from proper diagnosis.
So for anybody that's stuck, the first thing you just revealed is you're actually not stuck. You're highly motivated. You're in conflict. And what is the next thing you need to do? If you don't want to stay in that conflict with yourself, where I'm motivated not to make waves, I'm motivated not to go to the gym, I'm motivated to not try to fix this thing and just stay pissed off where I am. What is the next thing once you realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm not stuck. I'm like in this highly negative motivated place.
Everyone assumes there's a next thing.
Uh-oh.
So science even tells us, and this is what the yogis tell us, that awareness precedes control. So technically, all you need to do is be aware of the conflict. So let's understand the experience of someone who is stuck. So you want to do something and something arises within you, you're caught off guard, right? This is a positive thing. This would make me feel good. I went on this date. I don't even feel good about myself. I'm lonely. Let me go out and make friends. I go outside. Now I'm socially anxious. I don't want to be here. I'm burnt out. I'm an introvert. Let me go back home. So we're just getting ping-ponged around by ourselves. And we delude ourselves into thinking that going out is going to fix our loneliness. We don't think about how it's just going to increase my social anxiety. This is what stuckness is. It's a lot of irrelevant movement. So awareness is the most important thing. There's also a really fascinating study which shows that what we perceive as willpower, technically in the brain, this is going to sound kind of confusing, is monitoring of conflict. We think about willpower as overcoming a conflict, but the part of the brain that exerts willpower is a monitoring of conflict. I want everyone who's listening to really pay attention to this. I want you to really think about this. When you are trying to exert willpower, there is a struggle. And the moment that you fail, you stop paying attention to the conflict. If you really pay attention, you will find that as long as you are conflicted, the willpower is active. That's why you're conflicted. But the moment that you give up, the moment the willpower wins or loses, the conflict disappears.
So the only way that you can actually increase your willpower is by forcing yourself to do things that make you stay in conflict. So if you force yourself to go to the gym today, if you force yourself to not have a drink at happy hour, if you force yourself to sit in the stacks in the library and study chemistry for 2 hours, even though you don't want to, even though it's hard, even though it's painful, I think about this when I climb into the ice barrel. I hate doing it. I feel that conflict that you're talking about in my body and brain as I'm walking to the barrel, as I'm taking off my sweatshirt, as I'm stepping into the icy cold water. I freaking hate it. And the conflict itself and that wrestling with it is what's making you stronger. Isn't that right?
Let's stop and think about your experience, right? You're walking, conflict.
Well, the second I think about it, I'm like, oh, I got to do this thing today. It begins there. It begins like an hour before I even do the damn thing.
And so then you're monitoring the conflict. So notice that even in your example, you didn't decide to go in.
What do you mean?
So you said, I don't want to do this.
Right.
And then you get in.
Yes.
Most people perceive that, okay, you make a decision and then you're calm and then you go do the thing. That's not what happens.
No.
You're conflicted until it happens.
Right.
You don't make a decision. You're just monitoring conflict, and then the thing happens.
I just got something. I think for my whole life, I have looked at people that have discipline and willpower as people who can calmly, without any conflict, walk up to an ice barrel and calmly sit in. And I think that willpower means that they somehow can do these things that are very difficult without any internal friction. What you just taught me, Dr. K, is you just taught us, no, willpower is conflict and the ability to stay in it.
Yes. So once you have an understanding of something, then it's easy to do the right thing or not do the right thing. So I work with people who are addicted, right? So they'll say for the first couple of years, it's hard. And oftentimes they'll have a moment where they like have this flash of insight. And this is a very common experience for people. Oh, now I get it. This is no longer difficult. Now I get it. This is no longer difficult. That's what we should be cultivating, understanding. Because once the brain truly understands the risk-benefit ratio, once it understands the consequences of your actions, this is what I see when it comes to eating healthy, going to the gym. It is about cultivating understanding, because then the behavior will flow naturally. So what are the ways in which we can cultivate understanding? So there's one big mistake that most human beings make, which is not dwelling after an action is completed. We distract ourselves.
And that's a mistake. Okay.
So what we need to be doing is sitting with the consequences of our actions, whether they're good or bad. This is the other thing that we don't do. Very common in imposter syndrome, by the way, is we don't sit with the positive outcomes. So like when you do something well, when you get an A, you don't sit down for 15 minutes on a park bench and think to yourself, what did I do to get to this point? How did I get this A? What do I need to improve? What should I be grateful for? Right? Because for a lot of people who are very successful, it's constantly moving goalposts. Mm-hmm. There's no sense of gratitude. There's no sense of resting. And this is why everyone's so burnt out. Because no matter how much you get, you have to do better. You got 1 million followers on Instagram. Now you need 2 million. You got a 2 million. You never give yourself a pat on the back. It's always the next thing. It's always the next promotion. We never sit with the consequences of our actions.
Why is this important?
Because there's research that shows that giving your brain time to mull on the consequences of your actions, you don't even need to come to a conclusion or anything like that. This is what's super cool about it. Just giving your brain space to process reinforces the behavior. If it's a negative behavior, it'll reduce. If it's a positive behavior, it'll increase.
So let's put this into a normal person's life, okay?
Okay.
So let's use the example of you are focusing on just taking a walk for 30 minutes a day. Yeah. Okay. I did it in the day. Okay. Yeah, just today.
Yep.
Today. Not worrying about being consistent, not worrying about doing it for 30 days in a row. I'm going to focus on today. I'm going to take a 30 minute walk. If we do the walk, what do you want us to do in terms of to dwell on what we just
said? So for 2 or 3 minutes,
yep.
Sit after you're done with the walk, or even stop halfway. You don't have to do it at the end. Say, how do we feel about this? Was this a good thing? Was this a bad thing? What was hard about it? Just notice that behavior and let whatever thoughts come, come. If you do that, you'll say, you know, it was difficult to do, but I'm really glad I did it. And that's where you get behavioral reinforcement. That's when you have an understanding, this was worth it.
Let's say the converse happens. You said today, I'm going to find time to update my resume. And then the day goes by and you catch yourself at the end of the day and you've been scrolling for 2 hours. And now you're like in that mode where you beat yourself up and you're about to get back in that stuck mode. How do we use dwelling to help us wake up tomorrow and follow through?
Great question. So now what we want to do is, when I say dwelling, I mean awareness. So if you trigger your mental habits of beating yourself up, you're not actually learning. You're just going through a mental habit of like shame and beating yourself up. So anytime you have a failure, the mind has a tendency to trigger autopilot. Shame, self-blame. If you're a narcissist, you're going to blame other people. What I encourage you to do is if you had a goal for the day that you didn't hit, stop for a second, right? Let's think, okay, what do you think about this goal? Was this reasonable to do? Where does the desire for this goal come from? What got in the way? And we know this from like business perspectives, right? In medicine, we literally have something called an autopsy, where we sit and we have a postmortem and we look at what went wrong, what went right. This gets applied in the business world, but we don't do this in our personal lives. We default to, I should have done this. Next time, let me fix it. Don't even jump to fixing it. That's too far. Hold on a second. Take a big step back. Was this reasonable in the first place? Because when we jump automatically to fixing it, we are not acknowledging that hungry part of ourself that wants to be better. And so in that wanting signs us up for like unreasonable things. I want to work on the resume. I want that to be done. Why do I want it to be finished? Because I'm tired of having this hang over my head. Ah, I see. So your motivation to finish the resume is running away from negativity. If your motivation is running away from negativity and you sit down and work at your resume, is it joyful? Are you having a blast? No, that induces negativity. So now we're ping-ponging between negativity and negativity. And then something beautiful will happen. As you go through this awareness process, you look at this and then you realize in your mind, okay, there's no way to win this because it's all negative. So now I have a choice. Do I want to be negative for one day or do I want to be negative every day until this gets done? And then they will finish the resume. It'll happen so naturally. It'll happen so effortlessly. If you really look at your life, there are things that are hard for you, but one day it becomes easy. One day your mind just understands, oh my God, this is idiotic. This relationship is not working. And then we default to self-blame there too.
Yeah.
Right? So it's awareness. Hold on a second. Notice your reactions to things. Don't even try to steer yourself a particular way. And the more that we notice our reactions, the more that they melt away.
And the more your resistance to doing what needs to get done kind of melts away and sort of the obvious rises to the top.
That is detachment. The resistance to the difficult thing, because if we think about what is resistance, it is being attached to the opposite, right? So I resist going to the gym because I'm attached to not feeling embarrassed because everyone else is in shape.
Mm-hmm.
So it is my attachment to feeling embarrassment. It's the avoidance of the negative thing is what I'm attached to. So I can't do the correct behavior.
What you're teaching us to do is to tap into the deeper wiring and mechanism of the brain and the body to have it help us move toward the things that we want to feel in our life and that we want to be doing in our lives instead of being in a constant state of conflict with ourselves and feeling out of control. And I got so much out of this, and I would love for you to speak directly to the person listening. There are so many things that you taught us today and made us think about differently. But if there was one action or one thing that rises to the top that you would want the person to really put into action in their life, what would it be if you speak directly to them?
Here's what I'd say. We are way too obsessed with fixing things. You want your life to be different, right? You're saying this needs to change, this needs to change, this needs to change. But that's only one part of you. There's another part of you that doesn't want things to be different, right? That wants to stay at home, that wants to hit the snooze button, that doesn't want to ever go on a date again. And if you want to master your life, you need to take control of all parts of you. You need to understand all parts of you. And we spend way too much time trying to fix our problems without even understanding where did this come from? How does this manifest? How does it affect me? So spend a little bit more time or a lot more time with yourself understanding your conflict. Don't even try to fix your problems. Just understand them. Where does this come from? What is the experience of this in my life? Like in a moment to moment, what does my struggle actually look like? Where does my drive to change come from? Because a lot of that crap is societal conditioning and trying to keep up with the Joneses and all this kind of stuff too. And just spend time with yourself and understanding yourself. Because the more that you understand yourself, the more you will understand here's where the gas pedal is, here's where the brake is, here's where the steering wheel is. See, we're looking at what everyone else is doing. We're looking out the windshield and we're seeing everybody else driving their car and we're not even looking inside our own car. And then we wonder, why does our car keep on getting into a wreck? Why doesn't it go where other people's car goes? I can see it moving forward. How do I get it there? Start with understanding yourself. And once you understand yourself, because you are a unique human being with a unique set of levers that control your emotions and your behaviors and motivations and all that kind of stuff, and you're trying to use other people's answer for your unique genetics, your unique circumstances, your unique karma. And instead, understand yourself first. Just spend some time paying attention. That's the one thing that needs to change. If that changes, then you will be amazed at how easy everything else will, it'll be like dominoes. Where once you understand yourself, then a lot of things will start going positive in your life.
Oh my God, I feel so encouraged, Dr. K. Dr. K, what are your parting words?
So this is what I would say. I think the biggest mistake that most people make right now is that their shortcomings are manufactured. That you can have an objectively bad situation in life. I'm not saying that that's the case. But the biggest take is there's the actual problem and there's the crap that you do to yourself because of the problem. Now, one of those things is actually in your control and one of them is out of your control. The tragedy of life is that we get them confused. So I can't control whether I get into medical school, but I can control whether I beat myself up. And what is it that actually determines my success in life? It's not whether I get into medical school, it's whether I beat myself up. And that's the only thing that we can control because for medical school, someone else needs to agree. To get someone to marry me, someone else needs to agree. I can't control the world. I can just control myself. And we're so busy trying to control the world instead of controlling ourselves that we end up shooting ourselves in the foot because we're controlling something that's uncontrollable. And then no wonder we're ashamed. No wonder we're behind because I'm trying to drive somebody else's car. It's impossible. So spend more time focusing on what you do to yourself.
I think my heart just broke a little. Because when you really put it that way, that we are obsessed with fixing all these manufactured problems, like trying to keep up with other people or trying to drive other people's car, we end up just spending so much time beating ourselves up. And that you said it so beautifully, that if you only really looked at that one thing, like you can control whether or not you beat yourself up. You cannot control whether those people are going to hire you for that job. Or whether even the weight is going to fall off, or whether you will go 70 days or 700 days or 70 years never having alcohol. You cannot control what other people are going to do, but you can truly wake up every day and just focus on the actions that you take, which are in your control. You apply again. You apply to the next job. You go to the gym again. And then you also can control whether or not you beat yourself up during the process.
Absolutely.
And how much would your life fucking change if you simply were able to focus on the actions and not be so hard on yourself? Dr. K, it has just been really amazing to spend time with you today. My head is just spinning right now. I know I don't need to go do anything. I'm just in the moment with you. And I'm getting really choked up because I really hope that as you're listening, that you take this to heart. Because what I see in everything that you're talking about is how much pain we cause ourselves because we just don't know where the gas pedal is, where the brake is, where the wheel is. And these things, when you explain it and you go deep, but then you kind of rise up and go, no, just this is what you can do. It just feels so dumb that we are hurting ourselves this way because we don't know.
I get choked up too because I see the real tragedy of this is that it's avoidable.
Well, the real gift is that you're helping us see it so we can avoid it. Thank you. And thank you for being here with us. And please share this with people that you love. Dr. K will make a huge difference in their life. If you got something out of this, please hit subscribe. That tells us that you loved it. Please check out Dr. K's channel and his book. And in case nobody else tells you, I wanted to be sure to tell you that I love you. I believe in you. And I believe in your ability to take everything that you learned today and put it to use to help you create a more meaningful life. All right, I'll talk to you in a few days. Dr. Freaking K. I never knew this. Holy smokes. Also, if you smell lemon, it's because we have to use like a little lemon oil to pull my lipstick off these cups. Okay. They're not dirty.
It smells amazing.
Okay, I got to get my legs up here. I'm like, oh! No, I could actually do it. But I guess because my pelvis is so wide, I don't think I could do it in this chair.
Also, can I ask for a quick favor?
Of course.
I didn't bring any chapstick, but my lips are super dry.
Sure. What do you need? I've got something in my purse. Let me go grab it for you. Anything you need?
Y'all are so kind.
Okay, gotcha. Awesome.
You guys don't have to do it.
Okay. Oh, and one more thing. And no, this is not a blooper. This is the legal language. You know what the lawyers write and what I need to read to you. This podcast is presented solely for educational and entertainment purposes. I'm just your friend. I am not a licensed therapist, and this podcast is not intended as a substitute for the advice of a physician, professional coach, psychotherapist, or other qualified professional. Got it? Good. I'll see you in the next episode.
Stitcher.